Hello, Texas, America, the world. This is Mark Pantos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network on this 10th of May, 2007. We have a very interesting guest coming on at shortly after 8 o'clock this morning, and her name is Eileen Fleming. And you can find Eileen's site at wearewideawake.org. That's wearewideawake.org. She's quite an interesting lady with a lot to say about things going on around the world, especially in the Middle East. And she's going to be coming on again a little bit after 8 o'clock this morning with me to discuss all kinds of political and cultural issues in the last 2 hours of the show. I'm really looking forward to that encounter. Tomorrow, Daniel New will join me for the first 2 hours of the show to talk about the case involving his son, Michael New. Most of you in the American conservative community, the true American conservative community, know all about the Michael New case, going all the way back to when it really began in 1995. Michael's appeal was recently denied by the United States Supreme Court, with implications behind that decision that I think will continue to reverberate in the months and years ahead as we try to get at the bottom of what constitutes that which is constitutional, what constitutes that which is lawful, what constitutes the difference between lawful and unlawful actions on the part of a chief executive of the United States, what constitutes lawful and unlawful orders when those orders are issued to members of the armed forces of the U.S. Those are things that are not going to go away, that I think are only going to become more deep in their implications as we move toward a wider Middle Eastern conflict, and as we continue to see this tendency toward the expansion of the powers of the chief executive of the United States at the expense of the American people and at the expense of the Congress. And it seems to me that the whole issue of the Constitution, keeping the chains of the Constitution on our leaders and on our institutions, is absolutely essential if we're going to maintain a semblance of a history as a free people. And in the last analysis, I think that this is what is behind this Michael New case in regard to the failure of the Supreme Court of the United States to really deal with the issues and with the issues that were presented in this thing in terms of the evidence. Quite a case, and Dan New is going to bring us up to speed on that tomorrow morning for a couple of hours from 7 to 9 a.m. A lot of interesting things that we can talk about in the news today. One absolute piece of must reading is found by Justin Raimondo at Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative. The title of the piece is AIPAC on Trial. The lobby argues that good Americans spy for Israel. Raimondo goes on to ask, is there a First Amendment right to engage in espionage? Dorothy Rabinowitz seems to think so. Describing the actions of Steve Rosen and Keith Weissman, two former top officials of AIPAC, the premier Israel lobbying group who passed purloined intelligence to Israeli government officials, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist characterized them as, quote, activities that go on every day in Washington and that are clearly protected under the First Amendment, unquote. If what Rabinowitz says is true, if passing classified information to foreign officials is routine in the nation's capital, then we are all in big trouble. On August the 4th, 2005, Rosen, Weissman, and Pentagon analyst Larry Franklin were indicted by a federal grand jury and charged with violating provisions of the Espionage Act that forbid divulging national defense information to persons not authorized to receive it. The indictment traces the treasonous trio's circuitous path as they met in the shadows, in empty restaurants, at Union Station in Washington, and on street corners. Rosen and Weissman sought out and cultivated Franklin, milking him for information that they dutifully transmitted to their Israeli handlers. According to Rabinowitz, however, they were merely, quote, doing what they had every reason to view as their jobs, unquote. Which is true, assuming they understood their jobs to be spying for Israel. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live on RBN from San Antonio, Texas. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Stay connected to what's happening at the Republic Broadcasting Network by visiting our website,
www.rbnlive.com.
At rbnlive.com, you'll stay up to date with our latest broadcast schedule, learn about upcoming events, read about our air personalities and the programs they host, take part in discussion forums, read the latest breaking news, and listen to RBN programs on your computer by connecting to our live broadcast stream. Plus, you can download previous RBN programs from the archive completely free of charge.
Yeehaw!
That's right. Unlike other services, there is no charge to download programs from the RBN archive. Share them freely with others who are not yet listeners to the Republic Broadcasting Network and help spread the word. We're taking America back through the power of information.
Stay connected
to the Republic Broadcasting Network and our website, rbnlive.com.
Mark Antoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Eileen Fleming is going to join us at 8 o'clock this morning, Central Time. You can find her website at wearewideawake.org. That's wearewideawake.org. It's kind of an interesting title for a website. Sometimes I think when it comes to the average member of the American public, we ought to have a website entitled wearetotallycomatose.org. For it seems that no matter what happens in our society, somehow, some way, corporate media and the powers that control it seem to have an absolute way of making sure that the average member of the American public remains uninformed, confused, passive, ready to go along with the rest of the herd in regard to wherever it is that Mr. Bush and the Congress want to take us, wherever it is that the Israeli lobby wants to take us, wherever it is that the corporations want to take us, and this seems to be something that we hope will be overcome through a variety of means, including internet technology. And to the extent that Eileen Fleming is one of the people who is informing people of what's really going on and doing an end run around corporate media, that's something to be applauded. And I find that time and time again, the people that I know who are the most well-informed are those who are relying upon alternative media for their information, because clearly they're not getting what they need
from the mainstream publications for all of the obvious reasons, and that's something that comes forth in Mike Piper's book, The New Jerusalem, Zionist Power in America. That's one of the books that I'm wading my way through this week. Mike has a lot to say in that volume about who and what it is that controls American media. He's got a lot of names, a lot of connections, a lot of associations there, and it's all very, very clear that this is what we're dealing with, and that is the connection between Zionism and Zionist power on the one hand, and the American news media on the other is just one of the many institutions where Zionist power has become all-encompassing. That brings us back then to Justin Raimondo's piece today for Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative. You can find it in the May 7th issue, which is on the newsstand, and it's also online. And Raimondo's piece indicates that the lobby, meaning the Israeli lobby, argues that good Americans spy for Israel. These are absolutely incredible statements being made by Dorothy Rabinowitz today, as Raimondo reports them in Buchanan's The American Conservative, basically saying that Mr. Rosen and Mr. Weissman, two former top officials of AIPAC who have been charged with espionage, working in conjunction with Pentagon analyst Larry Franklin. Mr. Franklin, of course, is very, very cozy with the Israeli intelligence community. Mr. Franklin was an alleged expert on Iran. That's why the Israeli lobby was interested in him. It doesn't take a real genius to figure out that Mr. Franklin was passing secrets to the Israeli intelligence community through Mr. Rosen and Mr. Weissman, and that these intelligence secrets of the United States government had everything to do with Iran. Why is the Israeli lobby interested in Iran, and why are they interested in passing secrets related to Iran to the Israeli intelligence community? Doesn't take a real genius to figure that out when we read the kinds of things that are routinely reported in the Israeli press, including Haaretz and the Jerusalem Post. Israel wants to see Iran attacked. First and foremost, they'd like to see the United States do that. If that fails, they'll do it themselves. But suffice it to say that as you look at the totality of the information that's presented today in the Justin Raimondo article, it not only involves Israel's obsession with things related to Iran, but it relates to a much larger siphoning of American intelligence information that's been going on for many, many years at the hands of Israel. The Pollard spy case comes to mind, doesn't it, in this regard? Going all the way back to the late 1980s, there's Jonathan Pollard lurking over us again in regard to providing a larger context behind which we should see this present charge that has been leveled against Steve Rosen and Keith Weissman, the former top officials of AIPAC who've now been charged for spying on behalf of Israel. This is part of a seamless garment of incidents and events that go back years and years and years that suggest that as long as people are doing their jobs for Israel, the Israeli lobby is going to be happy, and they're going to suggest that such activities are entirely consistent with the responsibilities of American governmental officials to hand things over to Israel whenever Israel wants them. Raimondo goes on then to say that the trial of Mr. Weissman and Mr. Rosen is scheduled to begin on June 7th, and as the day of reckoning approaches, the Israel lobby is ratcheting up the rhetoric. So too is the defense. In a duet of hysterical accusations and frenzied rationalizations, the accused spy's defenders have described the proceedings as a frame-up, the result of an intra-bureaucratic struggle within the government, and a plot by anti-Semites in Bush's Justice Department to carry out a Washington pogrom. None of these flights of imagination are any more convincing than the Dream Team's defense of O.J. Simpson. Yet the noise level continues to rise as if sheer volume, instead of logical arguments, could overwhelm the copious evidence of the defendant's guilt. The indictment lists numerous acts of espionage dating back to 1999 in which Rosen and or Weissman acted as conduits for classified information flowing from Washington to Tel Aviv. The feds have been watching for a long time. The indictment makes clear that Rosen and Weissman didn't make a move without the FBI's counterintelligence unit knowing about it. This surveillance is how they happened on Larry Franklin, the Pentagon's top Iran analyst, who walked in on a luncheon meeting in Arlington, Virginia, attended by Rosen, Weissman, and Naor Gilon, chief of the political affairs section at the Israeli embassy. The feds were listening in as Franklin, referring to a document dated June 25th and marked top secret, announced that he had secrets to sell. Tell, not sell. Unlike the majority of post-Cold War spies, the AIPAC Franklin espionage ring wasn't centered around financial gain, but ideology. Franklin is a dedicated neoconservative, a minor yet key player in the neocon network, who served in the military attaché's office in the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv in the late 1990s, and was a Defense Intelligence Agency analyst with expertise in Iranian affairs working in Douglas Feith's policy shop. The counterintelligence unit was hot on Franklin's trail, and they watched his every move. His wholesale transfer of top-secret information on Iran, al-Qaeda, and other intelligence of interest to Israel, to Rosen and Weissman, who funneled it to their contacts in the Israeli embassy. The FBI gave Franklin enough rope to hang himself and then moved in, showing up at his door and confronting him with his treachery. A search of his home and office turned up a veritable lending library of classified documents dating back years, all of which had doubtless been made available to the Israelis. Faced with the probability of a long prison stretch, Franklin agreed to wear a wire to his subsequent meetings with Rosen and Weissman. In the months that followed, the FBI built its case, recording conversations and following the AIPAC duo. And they did a good job, apparently, because the government is making an unusual request that some testimony and evidence be shielded from the public due to its highly sensitive nature. This wasn't just a case of pilfering a few innocuous memoranda. It looks like Team AIPAC made off with the family jewels and maybe even the deed to the house. Why else would the Justice Department risk having a conviction thrown out on appeal on account of such a rarely invoked legal mechanism? The defense has protested proposed security procedures, magnetometers at the courtroom door, security sweeps to the courtroom itself, an officer of the court monitoring electronic surveillance while the trial is in session, on the grounds they would prejudice the jury against the defendants. They compare this to dragging Rosen and Weissman before the jury in prisoners' uniforms and shackles. Yet these security measures point to the seriousness of the matter before the court. The depth to which the Rosen-Weissman-Franklin spy ring penetrated the government, the ongoing breach they have opened in America's national security firewall. While most of the more cautious elements in the Jewish community are staying well away from this case, the radicals such as Rabbi Aviv Weiss and his Amcha Coalition for Jewish Concerns, who have previously devoted their efforts to freeing Jonathan Pollard, have now turned their attention to Rosen and Weissman. Stephen Lieberman and Ann Sterba, lawyers for the group, wrote in an amicus brief, quote, "Trying these two men for disclosing critical national defense information to foreign officials without letting the public know what the alleged information was will allow enemies of the Jewish people to exaggerate the significance of that evidence and will leave the press and the public to subsist only on rumors and speculation," unquote. The Weiss Group likens the prosecution of Rosen and Weissman to the Dreyfus case, in effect positing the existence of a vast anti-Semitic conspiracy at the highest levels of the Justice Department. Not exactly a credible contention, offered as it is without evidence, but the defenders of Rosen and Weissman are getting more frantic as the trial date approaches. As a writer for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz put it, quote, "Does this trial really carry any resemblance to the Dreyfus trial? It's a different era, a different country, a different system, a different accusation. Making this comparison demands some imagination, much ambition, and maybe a speck of chutzpah too," unquote. A recently unsealed defense memorandum details a February 16, 2005 colloquy between Rosen's lawyer, Abi Lowell, and Nathan Lewin, AIPAC's legal counsel, in which the latter reveals that Paul McNulty, then the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia and chief prosecutor in the case, quote, "would like to end it with minimal damage to AIPAC," unquote. Lewin told Lowell, quote, "he is fighting with the FBI to limit the investigation to Steve Rosen and Keith Weissman and to avoid expanding it," unquote. This is hardly the behavior one would expect of contemporary anti-Dreyfusards in the Justice Department plotting to scapegoat AIPAC and the Jews. We'll be back with Justin Raimondo's piece. This is Mark Gankoff, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the Task Force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, "A penny saved is a penny earned." By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We will be joined a little bit later on this morning by a very, very interesting woman by the name of Eileen Fleming. You can find her website at wearewideawake.org. That's wearewideawake.org. I hope we're awake, folks, because, you know, it seems to me that the majority of our population is absolutely asleep. When it comes to what Justin Raimondo is talking about today here in Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative, giving us the lay of the land in regard to this AIPAC spy case. We've been asleep at the switch on this one for a long, long, long time. In this case involving Larry Franklin and Wisen and Rossman is just the tip of the iceberg. It seems to me at the same time when we look at this case involving Rosen and Weissman and Franklin, if this goes back to the Jonathan Pollard case and a series of other things that suggest that what we are dealing with here is the tip of the iceberg in regard to an issue that will not go away in regard to who and what it is that's been controlling the foreign policy of the United States for a very, very long period of time. And as we look at this case, it seems to me that we need to be awake because there are those who want to make sure that this subterranean world of Israeli espionage in this country continues to remain under cover of darkness. That is what makes it so fascinating, really, to me, that we look at Paul McNulty, then the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia and chief prosecutor in this case. He's prosecuting, in this case, three people. And we'll talk specifically about Rosen and Weissman for a moment. He's prosecuting these folks for espionage activities against the people and the government of the United States, right? This is your U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, Mr. McNulty. He, however, indicated to APAC's legal counsel, Nathan Lewin, that by George, we really would like to end all of this with minimal damage to APAC. That's an amazing thing, isn't it? Mr. Rosen's lawyer, Abby Lowell, was also present there. So between Mr. Rosen's lawyer, Abby Lowell, and Nathan Lewin, APAC's legal counsel, there is the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia and chief prosecutor in the case, with all of the evidence in the world that has been presented by the FBI through their long-term surveillance, that Franklin and Rosen and Weissman were involved in a conspiracy to defraud the people and the government of the United States, and to be committing acts of what any of us would certainly define as treason. And yet this U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia is saying, hey, you know, we'd like to end this with minimal damage to the American-Israel Political Action Committee. An absolutely incredible statement. How far does this whole controversy and conspiracy go, folks? Are we dealing with something where Mr. McNulty knows that if we continue to lift the lid, there are going to be more and more and more worms that are going to emerge into the light of public scrutiny? That would be my interpretation of this. And as we go into this whole business of the Rosen-Weissman defense team, Mr. Romando goes on to say that this defense team is involved in a bit of graymail, that is, forcing the government to disclose as much classified information as possible during the discovery phase of this case, and hoping to derail the prosecution entirely as it weighs the effects of disclosure against the benefits of a possible conviction. As we go to press, Judge T.S. Ellis has ruled against the prosecution's proposal to shield sensitive testimony and evidence beyond a veil of pseudonyms and euphemism, which could delay the beginning of the trial. Efforts to embarrass the administration go beyond accusing the Department of Justice and extend to prominent figures such as Condoleezza Rice, who is accused by Abby Lowell of leaking national defense information to APAC, as Franklin did. General Anthony Zinni is being targeted in a similar manner. Both have been subpoenaed, along with David Satterfield, the deputy chief of the U.S. mission to Iraq, and William Burns, U.S. ambassador to Russia, to testify. If Rosen and Weissman are going down, the Israel lobby seems to be saying, then so are a lot of other prominent people, some of whom, like Zinni, just happen to be their enemies. This isn't gray mail, it's blackmail. It was Zinni, after all, who said of the Israel lobby and the neoconservatives, quote, I think it's the worst-kept secret in Washington. Everybody I talked to in Washington has known and fully knows what their agenda was during the run-up to the Iraq War and what they were trying to do, unquote. The intrigue thickened last October as word leaked that a proposed deal was dangled in front of Representative Jane Harman. APAC would back her to become head of the House Intelligence Committee if she would urge the government to treat Rosen, Weissman, and APAC itself with kid gloves. The Jewish Forward reported, quote, several congressional sources confirm that major donors to the Democratic Party have been lobbying Pelosi on behalf of Harman's nomination to head the Intelligence Committee, and that these attempts were not welcomed by the House Democratic leader, unquote. Time magazine named Chaim Sabin, the billionaire Hollywood producer and major APAC money bags, as one of the supplicants. Pelosi didn't fall for it, and Harman was rebuffed. Perhaps this was in the background when the speaker was booed as she addressed the subsequent APAC National Conference, although Pelosi got back in the Israel lobby's good graces after she stripped a provision from the military appropriations bill that would have required the president to go to Congress for permission to attack Iran. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com or call 312-224-2710, 312-224-2710.
Stand up and be counted. Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants, like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
We're back. This is Mark Danfoss, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Eileen Fleming will join us at just after 8 o'clock this morning, Central Time. You can find her website at wearewideawake.org. We've been looking at several news stories in the first part of the show here, especially Justin Raimondo's piece today for Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative. This is a part of the May 7th issue, which you can buy at your newsstand, but you can also find it online. And Raimondo's article is entitled AIPAC on Trial, The Lobby Argues That Good Americans Spy for Israel. That would seem to be the implication of this entire article in regard to the reaction of the Israeli lobby to this situation. And certainly as you go through the actions of Mr. Rosen and Mr. Weissman and Mr. Franklin, it becomes abundantly clear that in conjunction with the Pollard spy case of the late 1980s, this thing threatens to blow the lid off the Israeli lobby in entirely new and exciting ways, which is why I think it's a major story that this trial is going forward. It's going to be something to watch with absolute interest in the days ahead. to see what corporate media says about this case as well as what it doesn't say. And folks, again, if the lid lifts on this thing, the things that are going to be revealed will show the extent to which the Israeli lobby has been involved in promoting the war with Iraq. I believe that they have been the driving force behind this policy. They've been involved in all kinds of other things going back to the 1947-1948 time frame that have not been in the interest of the American people and the American government. And yet, nonetheless, here we are, all these years later, talking about a situation where our quandary in the Middle East is largely connected to these folks. And if the truth regarding this does come out as a result of this trial, then maybe we will be what Eileen Fleming's website suggests that we should be, and that is that we will be wide awake as to the extent to which the Israeli lobby has absolutely stolen this country blind. And so we need to keep a good eye on this case and keep our leaders' feet to the fire in demanding that justice occur in this situation. So as we go through and continue with the Raimondo piece, it absolutely bears mentioning once again that Jane Harman of California was AIPAC's choice to be the head of the House Intelligence Committee. This is something that AIPAC wanted Nancy Pelosi to have accomplished. Nancy Pelosi, who, of course, is herself very cozy with the Israeli lobby, nonetheless apparently had the insight to understand that naming Harman to this committee would absolutely expose Pelosi's own work on behalf of AIPAC, and therefore she didn't go for it. And it's amazing to me when Pelosi appeared then as a speaker at the next AIPAC National Conference, she was booed. And as a result of being booed, I guess, she eventually got back in her good graces after she stripped a provision from the military appropriations bill that would have required the president to go to Congress for permission to attack Iran. Folks, that shows you right there what the real agenda is in regard to attacking Iran and who's behind it. It shows us the extent to which both of the major parties are involved in this game and why I think this attack is going to happen. Let's hope that I'm wrong. Let's hope that our guest yesterday was wrong when he said the same thing. But if we're not wrong, and if this happens, we need to see who it is that's behind it, why they're behind it, what it is that they want out of this country. And we have to ask ourselves the fundamental question: is this constitutional? Is this lawful? Is this something that is in the interest of the average American, or isn't it? And if it isn't, we need to hold some people accountable. Raimondo then continues by saying that the defense of Rosen and Weissman, has fought to get the case against them thrown out on any number of grounds. They say that the Espionage Act is unconstitutional. It doesn't apply to their clients, but only to government officials. And last but not least, it's a violation of the Israel lobby's First Amendment right, quote-unquote, to betray classified information to its masters in Tel Aviv, twisting and turning, threatening and spitting, delaying as best it can. The defense has tried to wriggle out of it every which way to no avail. The trial is going forward, and the public spectacle of the biggest espionage scandal involving Israel since the prosecution of Pollard could deliver a body blow to the Israel lobby at a time when it has come in for public scrutiny and criticism as never before. But that hasn't prevented the lobby from brazenly defending the accused spies, in spite of the preponderance of evidence, and even hailing them as patriots. Writing in the foreword, Michael Barenbaum avers, quote, "Instead of being grounds for prosecution, perhaps the influence Stephen Rosen and Keith Weissman were trying to exert, making officials and the public aware of the danger from Iran, should be heralded," unquote. And why should we hail espionage as laudable in this instance? Well, you see, because the AIPAC defendants were ahead of their time in citing the danger from Iran. Quote, "In Washington, as Rosen and Weissman are learning the hard way, the crime is often not being wrong, but rather being right too early or at the wrong time, or being out of sync with the conventional wisdom, or pushing an inconvenient truth," unquote. In light of Judge Ellis's recent ruling that in this trial the Espionage Act is going to be interpreted narrowly, and that the burden is on the prosecution to show that the defendants knowingly harmed U.S. national security interests, the defense might be expected to make a pitch similar to Barenbaum's, that instead of prosecuting Rosen and Weissman, we ought to be pinning medals on their chests. The AIPAC defendants weren't spies. They were merely ahead of the curve, anticipating the day when a distinction is no longer made between being an American and the interests of the government of Israel, when a distinction is no longer being made between American and Israeli interests generally. That is the line we're hearing as the curtain goes up on the trial of Rosen and Weissman. Whether the jury or the public falls for it remains to be seen. Folks, let's keep an eye on this case. Steve Rosen and Keith Weissman and their handlers in the Israeli intelligence community do not want the truth about this whole situation to come out. And, you know, where's Mr. Bush on this? You know, I realize at one level, as this thing continues to proceed in the courts, that he should be maintaining his silence for a time. But at some juncture, it seems to me that there's going to have to be a formal statement made by the leaders of the legislative branch of the government, as well as Mr. Bush, in regard to this case. The AIPAC is on trial. The lobby argues that good Americans spy for Israel. That's Justin Raimondo today at Pat Buchanan's The American Conservative. It's the May 7th, 2007 issue, which you can either buy in the newsstand, make copies of it for your friends, or take a look at it online. And if you look at it online, send this piece out to as many of your friends as you can, because there's a lot at stake in this as we try to get people to understand that this business of Steve Rosen and Keith Weissman is not merely an isolated instance of two individuals who are acting largely on their own or with others who are misguided. This is a part of a deliberate, concentrated, comprehensive espionage program against the people and government of the United States that has been going on for these many, many years. And let's connect the dots, folks. Let's be wide awake, as Eileen Fleming might suggest to us, as we make the ultimate connections between the Jonathan Pollard spy case and this situation involving Mr. Rosen and Mr. Weissman. And let's do something else as well that's entirely legitimate. Where there are people who raise the question of dual loyalties, inherently so because of activities that suggest and that underscore that there is a tremendous conflict of interest going on here. As Jesus once said, no man can serve two masters. No man can serve two governments. No man can serve two countries or two societies and assume that their interests always coincide. If you have a situation where American Jews are publicly advocating a course of action that is not in the interest of this country, that has violated the public trust in this country, that violates the Constitution of this country, and that violates legitimate national security secrets of the government and people of the United States, then by George, I think the raising of this dual loyalty question is entirely appropriate. There are times when the raising of that question is pure demagoguery, and I acknowledge that, but where it is not demagoguery, where in fact there is reason to suspect on a prima facie basis that there is a dual loyalty question, or perhaps put in a more accurate time frame and an accurate perspective, that there's never been a dual loyalty question, that the primary loyalty of the people in these lobbying groups, including AIPAC, is a unified loyalty, and not to the United States, but to Israel. That's the ultimate question that underscores Raimondo's piece today. What's going to happen in this case involving Rosen and Weissman? Who knows, but the trial begins on June 7th, and is the Jews put together their so-called dream team to try and enact a verdict that is as ludicrous as the one that was undertaken and achieved by Mr. Cochran and company back during the O.J. Simpson days. Let's ensure that that doesn't happen again, or even if it should, that there will be a level of public coverage and public awareness of this situation through alternative media that will damage the Israeli lobby forever and get these people's influence out of the American political scene once and for all. That is part of what I think is a larger America First program. It's part of what I believe to be in the larger interest of the American people. Let's focus upon this in the days ahead. There is a fifth column operating in our midst, folks, and it's been controlling our elections, controlling our news media, controlling our educational institutions, controlling our government, controlling the minds and hearts of our people for a very, very long period of time. And this simply has to end. Talking about this, let's get back to something that Michael Hoffman was mentioning yesterday in his news serve at revisionisthistory.org. This comes to us, of course, from Australian Jewish News, dated May 8th. Nicolas Sarkozy, the new president of France, is in fact an individual who comes from a long line of Jewish and Zionist leaders and heroes. Is this an accident? Is it an accident given the fact that there were some difficulties that were going on in France as it pertains to the issue of globalism and to France's complete participation in the European Union? Is it an accident that Mr. Sarkozy is elected as president of that country against the backdrop of a situation where there had been a lot of protests going on France on the part of many people, including of a lot of Islamic immigrants, in regard to the foreign policy of that country as it relates to Israel? The Australian Jewish News tells us that Nicolas Sarkozy gave an interview in 2004, and in that interview, he expressed an extraordinary understanding of the plight of the Jewish people for a home. Quote, "Should I remind you of the visceral attachment of every Jew to Israel as a second mother homeland? There is nothing outrageous about it. Every Jew carries within him a fear passed down through generations, and he knows that if one day he will not feel safe in this country, there will always be a place that would welcome him, and this is Israel," unquote. Sarkozy's sympathy and understanding is most probably a product of his upbringing, for it is well known that Sarkozy's mother was born to the Mala family, one of the oldest Jewish families of Salonika, Greece. Additionally, many may be surprised to learn that his yet-to-be-revealed family history involves a true and fascinating story of leadership, heroism, and survival. It remains to be seen whether his personal history will affect his foreign policy and France's role in the Middle East conflict. In the 15th century, the Mala family, which in Hebrew is messenger or angel, escaped the Spanish Inquisition to Provence, France, and moved about 100 years later to Salonika. In Greece, several family members became prominent Zionist leaders, active in the local and national political, economic, social, and cultural life. To this day, many Malas are still active Zionists around the world. Sarkozy's grandfather, Aaron Mala, nicknamed Benkio, was born in 1890. Benico, this is spelled in two different ways here, folks. I think that the spelling that we're looking for here is Benico. Benico's uncle Moshe was a well-known rabbi and devoted Zionist who in 1898 published and edited El Avenir, the leading paper of the Zionist national movement in Greece at the time. His cousin Asher was a senator in the Greek Senate and in 1912 helped to guarantee the establishment of the Technion, the elite technological university in Haifa, Israel. In 1919, he was elected as the first president of the Zionist Federation of Greece, and he headed the Zionist Council for several years. In the 1930s, he helped Jews flee to Israel, to which he himself immigrated in 1934. Another of Benico's cousins, Pepo Mala, was a philanthropist for Jewish causes who served in the Greek Parliament, and in 1920 he was offered but declined the position of Greece's Minister of Finance. After the establishment of the State of Israel, he became the country's first diplomatic envoy to Greece. In 1917, a great fire destroyed parts of Salonika and damaged the family estate. Many Jewish-owned properties, including the Malas, were expropriated by the Greek government. Jewish population immigrated then from Greece, and much of the Mala family left Salonika to France, America, and Israel. Sarkozy's grandfather, Benico, immigrated to France with his mother. When in France, Benico converted to Catholicism and changed his name to Benedict in order to marry a French Christian girl named Adalie Bouvier. Adalie and Benedict had two daughters, Suzanne and Andrea. Although Benedict integrated fully into French society, he remained close to his Jewish family origin and culture. Knowing he was still considered Jewish by blood during World War II, he and his family hid in Marcellac de Croissat in the Corrèze region of western France. During the Holocaust, many of the Malas who stayed in Salonika or moved to France were deported to concentration and extermination camps. In total, 57 family members were murdered by the Nazis. Testimonies reveal that several revolted against the Nazis, and one, Buna Mala was the subject of Nazis' medical experiments in the Birkenau concentration camp. In 1950, Benedict's daughter, André Mala, married Paul Nagy Boska I Sarkozy, a descendant of a Hungarian aristocratic family. The couple had three sons, Guillaume, Nicholas, and François. Marriage failed, and they divorced in 1960. So André raised her three boys close to their grandfather, Benedict. Nicholas was especially close to Benedict, who was like a father to him. In his biography, Sarkozy tells that he admired his grandfather, and through hours spent of listening to his stories of the Nazi occupation, the Maquis, the French resistance, de Gaulle, and the D-Day, Benedict bequeathed to Nicholas his political convictions. Sarkozy's family lived in Paris until Benedict's death in 1972, at which point they moved to Neuilly-sur-Seine to be closer to the boy's father, Pal, who changed his name to Paul Sarkozy. Various memoirs accounted Paul as a father who did not spend much time with the kids or help the family monetarily. Nicholas had to sell flowers and ice cream in order to pay for his studies. However, his fascination with politics led him to become the city's youngest mayor and to rise to the top of French and world politics. The rest is history. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Eileen Fleming of WeAreWideAwake.org will be on shortly after 8 a.m. Stay tuned.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free 888-699-NEWS or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Hey, America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rules? Our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens. Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is to have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Eating a well-balanced diet filled with whole foods is sometimes hard to achieve, so supplementation can be beneficial. But WholeFoodToday.com believes that if you want to supplement, you should be doing so with products made from complex and natural whole foods, which the body can recognize and utilize as food, rather than with synthetic formulas of isolated vitamins made in chemical factories. Whole Food Today is dedicated to bringing you the finest health products at an incredible value. Nutrient formulas for men and women, super green food formulas made from over 30 vegetables, legumes, sprouts, immunity health formulas, coconut oil, krill oil, and many other products made 100% naturally. Visit us today at www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. That's www.wholefoodtoday.com or call 1-800-989-9840. Whole Food Today offers free shipping to all orders anywhere in the continental U.S. Whole Food Today, empowering people to attain and maintain extraordinary health.
back. This is Mark Pantos, the American, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Eileen Fleming of WeAreWideAwake.org will be on with me shortly after 8 o'clock this morning. Just wanted to remind you that we are on a pledge drive this week with the Republic Broadcasting Network. You can help us in one of three ways: giving us a call, contacting us on the World Wide Web, or sending us something through snail mail. If you can possibly do that, folks, we really urge you to help us to the extent that you can, because much like our counterparts with the American Free Press up in Washington, we're the only game in town when it comes to electronic media that gives you the information that the Zionist-controlled, corporate-controlled American media is not going to give you. And it's very important that we have your support to the extent that you're able to do it. And that's achievable in one of three ways. Give us a call at 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Contact us on the World Wide Web at republicbroadcasting.org. Or send us something through U.S. mail at 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Again, those contact points are by telephone at 1-800-724-2719, through the web at www.republicbroadcasting.org, or through snail mail at 1015 South Mays, just like the baseball player's name, Willie Mays, 1015 South Mays, Suite 100, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. You know, as we get back to this whole thing that is being talked about this morning at the Australian Jewish News, which Michael Hoffman sent out to his constituency yesterday, I've posted this story at Breaking All the Rules News. This, again, is the May 8th, 2007 Australian Jewish News. Ronan Eliaz is the Elias, E-L-I-A-Z, Eliaz is the author of this story. The last couple of paragraphs, I think, tell the tale of the tape in terms of the significance of Nicolas Sarkozy's election as the current president of France. It may be a far leap to consider that Sarkozy's Jewish ancestry may have any bearing on his policies vis-a-vis Israel. However, many expect Sarkozy's presidency to bring about a dramatic change, not only in France's domestic affairs, but also in the country's foreign policy in the Middle East. One cannot overestimate the magnitude of the election of the first French president born after World War II, whose politics seemed to represent a new dynamic after decades of oligarchs Chirac and Mitterrand. There is even a reason to believe that Sarkozy, often mocked as the American friend, quote-unquote, and blamed for ultra-liberal worldviews, quote-unquote, will lean towards a more Atlanticist policy. One significant policy modification that could actually come through under Sarkozy is on the Syrian and Lebanese fronts. The new French president is not as friendly to Lebanon as was his predecessor. As a minister of interior, Sarkozy shared much common policy ground with former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. There you have it, folks. Is France's foreign policy going to be altered through this man's election? You better do this. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Eileen Fleming. WeAreWideAwake.org. Stay tuned.
It's true.